We're going to get started from the bottom of Kuf Mem Beis Amud Beis, 13 lines from the bottom by the two dots. Okay, so the Mishnah told us, Ma'os Sha'al Hakar Mina'er. The Mishnah was discussing a case of a person who left money on their bed when Shabbos began, and now they want to go to sleep, they want to use the bed. So the Mishnah said, what you have to do is you have to kind of pick the bed up and shake the money off of the bed. The assumption being, of course, that you can't directly move the money because the money is mukta. So the Gemara points out, Amar Rav Oshia, Shachach Arniki Bechatzer, Meniach Aleha Kikar Otinok Umetaltala. Let's say a person forgot their purse, their wallet in a courtyard, and there was money inside of it on Shabbos, and they don't want to leave it lying around in case somebody takes it. So the Gemara says, not a problem. Either take a loaf of bread or a baby, put it on top of the purse, and then you can carry it. This, you might remember, this is very reminiscent of a Gemara we had way back in the, you know, closer to the beginning of this Masechta, about carrying a dead body. If the Gemara says if a person died on Shabbos, you can use a loaf of bread or a baby to carry, and the Gemara is going to actually talk about that in a second. Okay, then the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yitzchak, Shachach Levena Bechatzer, Miniach Aleha Kikar Otinok Umetaltel. The same thing, let's say a person left a brick in the Chatzer, right? Let's say you're in the middle of building a house, and there were some bricks that you forgot to put away before Shabbos. So the Gemara says the same thing. If you want to move the brick, all you need to do is take a loaf of bread or a baby, and then you can use that to move the brick. Amar Rabbi Huda Bar Shila. Yeah. What was that?
What rishut
is the chatzer? Yeah, this is a rishus hayachid. This is a mukta issue. This is not a hotza problem. Okay, so the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Huda Bar Shila Amar Rabbi Asi, Pamachas Shachachu Desakya Malaya Mos Bisrati. One time, there was somebody who left a sack full of coins in a public area. Uva'u V'shalu Es Rabbi Yochanan V'amar Lohen, Hi Nichola Kikaru Tinuk V'tiltalua. Rabbi Yochanan gave the same advice that we keep on giving. Take a baby, take a loaf of bread, and then you can use that to carry the bag full of money. So Amar Mar Zutra, Hilchasa Kechol Hanei Shmaitza B'shocheach. Comes Mar Zutra and qualifies all the statements that we just made, and he says that this idea that I could take a baby or a loaf of bread and use it to carry move the money or the brick or whatever, that's assuming that I forgot those things there when Shabbos began. But the implication is that if I left them there intentionally, then I would not be allowed to use this to move the brick or to move the money. However, Rav Ashi Amar, Afilu Shachach Namu.
Guys, can
everyone mute if they're not muted? Thank you. Okay, so the Gemara says, Rav Ashi Amar, Afilu Shachach Nami Lo, Velo Amru Kikar Otinok Elo Lameis Bilvad. Comes Rav Ashi with something which we kind of touched on again back on Daf Lamed in this Masechta. Rav Ashi says that even if a person forgot the brick or forgot the money in the chatzer, they would still not be allowed to move it by using a baby or a loaf of bread, because as we alluded to a minute ago, that heter, according to Rav Ashi, is unique for a dead body. There was a unique heter that the Gemara earlier spoke about already that was instituted, that if a person died on Shabbos, you can take a baby or a loaf of bread to use that to move the dead body. But according to Rav Ashi, that heter does not extend beyond the dead body. So according to Rav Ashi, there is never a scenario where you're allowed to move a bag full of money or a brick or whatever it is on Shabbos, even if I put a baby or a loaf of bread on top of it. He says that was a unique heter that Chazal instituted specifically to move a dead body. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Abaye manach kapa akipe, Rava manach sakina abaryona umetaltala. So Abaye used to take this like spoon, and he would put the spoon on top of like a bundle of produce that would allow him to carry that. And Rava would carry a knife on top of a shechted young dove. Again, normally the bundles of grain and produce and the dove would be, that's dead, would otherwise be mukta. They have no use on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that Abaye and Rava came up with these creative ways to be able to carry what was otherwise mukta. They put a spoon or they put a knife or whatever it was on top of that item. So Amar Rav Yosef, Kama Harifa Shmaitza Dedardike. So Rav Yosef was almost kind of poking fun at them. He said, look how sharp these kids are. Look how sharp these, Abaye and Rava are. He says, Emer de Amar Rabbanan b'shocheach. L'chadchila mi'amor. Rav Yosef says, what kind of a heter is this? He says, Chazal only allow you to carry something that you forgot there. They don't allow this l'chadchila. It sounds like from the Gemara that Abaye and Rava would frequently do this. It sounds like Abaye used to put his spoon on top of bundles of grain, and Rava used to often put his knife on top of shechted dove. So it sounds like they were doing this all the time. So Rav Yosef says, this is like a heter if a person forgot something in the chatzir. But to allow this lecharchila, who says that Chazal allowed this lecharchila? So the Gemara says, no, it's not true. Amar Abaye, Ilav de Adam Chashivana, Kapa akipe lamali. Hachazu lemizga alayhu. Amar Rava, ana ilav d'adam chashavana, sakina bar yona lamali. Hachazi lila umtsa. The Gemara says, in reality, the fact that Abaye and Rava needed to put spoons and knives on the grain and on the dove was really just a chumrah. Because in reality, both the grain and the dove actually were not really muktzah. Why not? So the grain, Abaye says, I could use it to sit on. I could use it as a chair. So it's not really objectively muktzah. And the dove, so the Gemara assumes, even though, you know, we'll leave aside how this plays out lahalacha, even though we'll get to this in a second, he assumes that raw meat actually is theoretically edible. Now, many posts can point out that today, you know, the Gemara has this assumption in a number of places in this Masechta that raw meat is edible and raw fish is not. Now, we know today that, you know, it's the exact opposite. People eat sushi today. People eat raw fish and sushi. I don't think anybody eats raw meat. So, but okay, but steak tartare is still cooked a little bit, isn't it? It's like, it's rare. You know?
I don't know.
It's totally raw. I thought it was...
Rabbi, so if you can eat the raw dove, why
do
they have to put the...
Okay, good. So that's exactly what the Gemara says. The Gemara says, because Abaye and Rava, they were an Adam Chasha, so they didn't want to give off the wrong impression. They didn't want people to think that they were just Stam carrying Mukta, so they put a spoon or a knife just kind of, you know, to kind of, you know, circumvent any, like, Maris Ayin issues, basically. Because, you know, they don't want people to get the wrong impression. So the Gemara points out the following diuk. The Gemara says, Taima de Chazi Lo'umtza, Halo Chazi Lo'umtza Lo. The Gemara says, the only reason why Rava was justified in carrying this dove, even theoretically without the knife, was only because, theoretically, again, the times of the Gemara at least, raw meat was technically edible. So the implication, of course, is that if it wasn't edible to eat, it would be problematic for him to carry. But that leads us to another problem, which is, Lememra de Rava ke Rabbi Yehuda Svirle. Does that mean to imply that Rava holds like Rabbi Yehuda? Now, we know already, we're very familiar with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda regarding Mukta all throughout this Masechta. We've seen his opinion quoted hundreds of times already, where Rabbi Yehuda was, you know, pretty machmir when it comes to muktzah. He wasn't as machmir as Rabbi Nechemiah, who thought that pretty much everything in the world was muktzah, you know, more or less. But Rabbi Yehuda does think that there are many, many things that we know. In other words, he basically subscribes to the principles of muktzah that we hold of today, as opposed to, let's say, Rabbi Shimon, who basically denies 99% of Hilchos muktzah. But specifically what the Gemara is referring to here is the following concept, which we're going to talk about a little bit later in the Masechta, is if, let's say, I have something which initially was fit for human consumption, and then later on, it only became edible for animals to eat. So Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion, again, as we'll see this later on, that once something becomes edible for human consumption, once it's set aside for people to eat, it's no longer fit for animals. So in other words, what that basically means is that if I have food which is edible, the assumption is that I'm not going to feed that to my dog if I can eat it myself. So the problem now is, again, this is based on an inference from the Gemara. The Gemara says, had this raw meat not been edible, so then we would have had the following problem where we're going to now be attributing Rava's position to that of Rabbi Yehuda. Why is that such a problem? In other words, why is it a problem to suggest that Rava is siding with Rabbi Yehuda, that once something is edible for human consumption, you can no longer, give it to your animals? The problem with that is that Ha'amar Rava L'shema, is that Rava one time told his servant, his attendant, Tavi li baravaza v'shade me'el Shunra. Rava told his attendant to roast for him a goose or a duck and take the intestines of the duck and throw them to the cat. Now the problem is that if you're going to tell me that Rava really subscribes to Rabbi Huda's position, so that means that if the, in other words, the duck is basically edible, right, that it's fit for human consumption, what right do I have to take the intestines of the duck and throw them to my dog to eat, right? Because again, this is all talking about on Yontif, in this case, obviously, because you're not roasting on Shabbos, obviously. So on Yontif, he's roasting this, you know, the duck, and he's telling his attendant, I want you to throw the intestines to the dogs. How is that okay? In other words, if he really holds like Rabbi Huda, then when something is fit for human consumption, it is not also fit for animal consumption, what right does he have to throw the intestines to his dog? So the Gemara says, no, that's not a good question. The Gemara says, Hasam kevan demasrach daite ilavime asmo, says the Gemara, that you know going into Yontif that the intestines of the duck are going to start to rot. That's just the way they are. So, in other words, you already had in mind from before Yontif to feed them to your animal, so therefore they're not considered muktzah. That's why it was permissible for Rava to tell his attendant to give the duck intestines to his dog to eat. Then Gemara says, "Hachinami nistaber." It's actually logical to say this way. De Rava ki Rabbi Yehuda Svirle. Namely, it's logical that Rava subscribes to the position of Rabbi Yehuda, that once something is edible for human consumption, it is no longer fit for animals to eat. How do we know that? The Darash Rava, Isha lo sikanes levesa itzim lito mehenud, v'ud shenishbar aser lahasiko biyantif, l'fisha mesikin mechilim ve'in mesikin meshev rechilim shmamina. Rava in Meseches Beitza says the following: a woman on yantif is not permitted to enter into a warehouse that stores wood, to take wood from the warehouse to use as like a poker, to use as like one of these like a fire brands, in other words, to use to cook with. Let's say she already had a wooden poker that she was using from beforehand, and then it broke. She would not be allowed to then take that wood and throw it into a pre-existing fire either, because this is actually a Gemara that we saw earlier in the Masechta, where the Gemara told us, Mesikin bekalim, ve'ein mesikin b'shivrei kalim, which means that a person is allowed to take a whole intact kli on yantif and throw it into a fire to use as firewood, basically, but to take a broken kli would be problematic. So in other words, you can't use a broken kli or shards of a kli to ignite or to continue fueling a fire on yantif, but a whole kli would be okay. So we see from here that Rava, in fact, subscribes to Rabbi Yehuda. In other words, that he subscribes to the general principle of Hilchos Mukta. In other words, if Rava denied Mukta like Rabbi Shimon, he wouldn't be concerned with all of these issues about not throwing the wooden poker into the fire, not throwing the duck intestines to his dog. The fact that Rava was even concerned about these issues implies that he subscribes to the position of Rabbi Yehuda. Okay, so the Mishnah now continues. Mishnah says,
Rabbi. Why do they consider this nola? Why don't we just consider this muksa? Because once the kli loses its shame, kli has no use. And obviously you can't use that as firewood on Shabbos. But why is that considered nola? Why isn't that just a classic case of muksa?
Well, I'm saying nola is a form of muksa. Nola, right? In other words, nola is really just like a subcategory of muksa. It just means that like the item wasn't this way when Shabbos began. Now it changed form. Right, so if I had a whole kli and now it's a broken kli, that's called nola. It's different, right? It looks different. So that's a form of mukta. So it's really right. Calling something nola really is the same thing as calling it mukta. It's really the same thing. Okay, so the Mishnah now presents the following machlokas. Beis Shammai omrim ma'avirin me'al hashulchan atzamos uklipin uveisila omrim misalik es atavla kula umena'ara. So the Mishnah says that according to Beis Shammai, let's say I finish eating lunch on Shabbos and now I have all this garbage laying around the table. I have bones and I have shells. I have all this stuff that I'm going to throw in the garbage. Beis Shammai says no problem. You can individually pick every single bone and shell and whatever and throw it out, whereas Beis Hillel says no, you can't do that. You can't touch the bones and the shells. You have to pick up the whole tablecloth and shake it out either outside or just throw it in the garbage or whatever it is. Now we'll see the Gemara actually is going to actually reverse these opinions in a second. But
what's the issue,
this is mukta. This is not a malacha issue.
What's the difference if you take it individually?
We'll see in the Gemara what the issue here is, because if you think that the shells and the bones are fit for animal consumption, then you can argue that they're not really mukta. Then I could pick them up. If you think that because something was set aside for human consumption, that means that I can't fit it to my animal, then they're just mukta. So I can't touch them. I have to figure out a way to move them without touching them. Otherwise, because it would be a violation of movement. No, I'm saying you can eat it, but I'm saying, but once you finish eating it, so the question is, what do you do with the bones? So according to what seems to be Beis Shammai, even though we'll see in the Gemara in a second, it's really Beis Hillel. So he says you could just pick up the bone and you could throw it to your dog. You could throw it and you could do whatever you want with it, because since it's fit for your dog to eat, so you could just do it. So it's not mukta. Whereas the other opinion in the Mishnah says that no, that because this was only set aside for human consumption, so I can't now take the chicken bone and throw it to my dog anymore. So the only way to move it is by taking the whole tablecloth and shaking it out without actually touching the bone or the shells. Okay, then the Mishnah says, "Ma'avirin milifnei hashulchan peirurin pachos mikizayis v'seir shalafunin useir adashim mimnei shehu maicha behema." Similarly, the Mishnah says that let's say I have little pieces of bread on the table that are less than a kizayis, or I have the shells of peas or lentils. So again, I can move those off the table because they are fit for my animal to eat. Then the Mishnah says, "Sfog." What about a sponge? So, im yeshlo or beis achiza mekanchinbo, v'im lav ein mekanchinbo. So the Mishnah says it depends. If the sponge has a handle on it, so then I'm allowed to use it on Shabbos. If there's no handle on the sponge, then I can't. This is obviously going to be a schita problem, an issue of squeezing, which is going to really lead us into the next parak on the next amud, which we'll talk about this a lot more. And then the Mishnah says, The Chachamim say that you're allowed to move a sponge on Shabbos regardless of whether it has a handle. Now again, we're not saying whether you can use the sponge, that's a separate problem. You can move it, it's not muktzah. And also, the Mishnah says that a sponge is also not mekabel tumah, which again we'll see in the Gemara what. So the Gemara explains, Amar Rav Nachman, Anu ein lanu elo bishamei k'Rabbi Yehuda uvisalo k'Rabbi Shimon. So first of all, the Gemara just points out, right, that really the shittos in the Mishnah in the beginning are you know, should really be reversed. In other words, Beis Hillel should be the one who says that you're allowed to move the shells and the bones with your hand, and Beis Shammai should be the one who says that it's problematic. That's based on other opinions of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai that we know throughout Shas, where we find that Beis Shammai holds like Rabbi Huda, who subscribes to Muktzah, and Beis Hillel holds like Rav Shimon, who effectively denies Hilchos Muktzah. Okay. Then the Mishnah says, Ma'avir mi lefnei ha-shulchan peirurin, misayei alei l'Rabbi Yochanan, da'amar Rabbi Yochanan, peirurin she'ein bohen kizayis, asir la'abdan biyat. So our Mishnah seems to be supporting the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan, because Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that even if I have bread that's less than a kizayis, you're not allowed to just destroy that. You can't just throw it out. We know that generally speaking, there's an isser to handle bread in a contemptuous manner. You have to throw it out in a bag. You can't just throw it in the garbage directly. So Rabbi Yochanan has a chiddush that restriction on the way in which you have to treat bread applies even if the bread is less than the size of a kizayis. And that's meduyek from our Mishnah, because our Mishnah said that even if you have pieces of bread on the table that are less than a kizayis, you still have to move them off the table and treat them with respect. You can't just throw them directly into the garbage. Okay. Then the Mishnah said, Seir Shalafun, and that was talking about the shells of peas. So Mani Reb Shimon, he delays le muktzah. So the fact that the Mishnah allows you to move the shells of peas and lentils and things like that, presumably that line in the Mishnah is following the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. As we've already mentioned, Rabbi Shimon denies most of Hilchos Muktzah. The problem, however, is Ema Seifa, Sfog, Im Yeshlo Beis Achizo Mekanchen Bo, Vim Lavei Mekanchen Bo, Asa'an L'Rabbi Yehuda De'amar Davar She'in Miskavin Aser. How can you tell me in the first part of the Mishnah that we're following Rabbi Shimon, that I'm allowed to move the shells of peas and lentils because Rabbi Shimon doesn't subscribe to Muktzah at all? And then in the very next line in the Mishnah, you're telling me that, oh, there's a distinction about whether you're allowed to use a sponge on Shabbos depending on whether the sponge has a handle. That distinction seemingly only makes sense according to Rabbi Yehuda, because we know that Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that a davar she'eino miskavin is usher. So if you're setting yourself up for a situation where you may come to violate the malacha of schita, so Rabbi Yehuda says even if it's unintentional, that would still be problematic. So how can one line in the Mishnah be Rabbi Shimon and the very next line conform to Rabbi Yehuda? So the Gemara says, no, that's not a problem. The Gemara says, Baha, the famous answer that we've also seen, you know, 100 times before in this Masechta. This is a psik resha. Because it's a psik resha, in other words, because it's inevitable, when you use a sponge, it is inevitable that you're going to squeeze water out of the sponge. There's no two ways about it. Therefore, even Reb Shimon will agree that it will be usher to use a sponge that does not have a handle. If there's a handle on the sponge, then it's okay, because it's not inevitable that you're going to squeeze the actual sponge. You're going to hold it by the handle. There's no handle on the sponge. Even Reb Shimon would agree that it's problematic to use on Shabbos, and therefore this entire Mishnah can still reflect the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. Okay. Then the Gemara says, Hani garinin de tamre armiyasa, sharu letal tulinu ho vachazin agaviman, udaparsiyasa aser. Comes the Gemara and makes the following distinction regarding certain types of dates. So the Gemara says, for example, a person is allowed to carry on Shabbos Aramean dates, but not Persian dates. What's the difference? So the Aramean dates apparently were of much lesser quality, so people would often feed them to their animals. So therefore, since you were allowed to carry them to eat on your own, you can therefore use them also to feed to your animals, whereas the Persian dates, which were only fit for human consumption, they were too high quality to feed to your animals, that would be problematic. And the Gemara says, Shmuel metaldilahu agav rifta. Shmuel used to move these dates, again, these Persian dates, which are otherwise muktzah, he used to move them together with a piece of bread. And the Gemara says, Shmuel letameh, da'amar Shmuel osa adam kol tzarko bepas. This is the Shita of Shmuel, generally speaking. This is a famous opinion of Shmuel towards the end of Maseches Brachos, where Shmuel holds that a person is allowed to use bread for any purpose they want. And again, this is going back to what we were just talking about a few lines ago, where Rabbi Yochanan said that even if I have bread less than a kezias, I have to treat it with dignity. I can't just throw it directly in the garbage. Shmuel has a slightly different approach. He says that, again, as long as I'm not literally destroying the bread and treating it in a completely contemptuous manner, if I have an actual purpose, an actual need to use the bread for something, I can use it as a way, as a base to carry these Persian dates on Shabbos. The Gemara says, Rabba metaltaluhu agav lekana demaya. Rabba used to carry the dates together with a pitcher of water. Rav Huna berei de Rav Yehoshua aved luhu kegraf shel rei. So the Gemara says that Rav Huna used to make the dates into what's called a graf shel rei. A graf shel rei is a term that we mentioned a few times before. A graf shel rei just basically means something disgusting on Shabbos. So for example, if you have a dirty diaper lying around the house on Shabbos, so even though it has no use, you're allowed to move it because it's called a graf shel rei, something disgusting. Or if a baby, pooped or peed on the floor or whatever, so again, it would be permissible to move that because it's called a graf. So the Gemara says that Rav Huna used to make the dates into a graf shorei. In other words, he used to basically collect all the seeds of the dates in a vessel, and then he was allowed to move that vessel because he made it into a graf shorei by spitting all the seeds of the date into that vessel. So the Gemara says, what do you mean? Amar le Rav Ashi li Ameimar v'chi osin graf shorei lechadchila. So Rav Ashi turns to Ameimar and asks him, how was Rav Huna allowed to do this? The notion, the concept of a graf shorei means that, in other words, what it means is that if I happen to stumble upon a dirty diaper or whatever it is, so then I'm allowed to move it on Shabbos. You're not allowed to set up a situation of a graf shorei lechadchila. So he says this whole notion of setting up a graf shorei doesn't really make any sense. Can everyone just mute themselves? I think there are some people who are not muted. It's like there's a lot of background noise. Okay, fine. So the Gemara.
Rabbi Becker.
Yes.
Am I to assume from this, if I'm eating walnuts or pistachio nuts and I have the shells, that I'm going to assume that those are not edible by an animal? I would not be able to remove them by my hand?
Well, no. No. Those you're allowed to crack open because you can't get to the food otherwise, right? There's no way to eat the... Like, for example, you can peel an orange on Shabbos because you can't get to the orange otherwise. There's no way to get to the food inside. So that's not mukta. That you're allowed to do. In fact, remember the whole case that we spoke about earlier of a klisha malach to liyisr letzorech gufo is taking a hammer to crack open nuts. So obviously you're allowed to do that to get to the food inside, right? But again, the question becomes, once I'm done eating the orange, once I'm done eating the nuts inside, what do I do with the shells now? That's really the issue that we're talking about here. Okay.
So that's exactly my question.
You're saying
what do I do with the
shells? So that goes back to the machlokas in the Mishnah. So since we ended up reversing the opinions, right, we've probably followed Basila like we do most of the time. Yeah. And Lamaskana, right, Basila says that you're actually allowed to pick them up and throw them out. Okay. So the Gemara now says, Rav Sheshes, Zarek Luhu Belishni. Rav Sheshes used to like spit the date seeds out with his tongue. He used to just kind of like shoot them out of his mouth. And then the Gemara says, Rav Papa, Zarek Luhu Achore Hamita. Rav Papa used to throw them behind the couch that he was sitting on when he was eating. Amru Alava Rabbi Zechariah ben Avkulas, Shayamachzer Panav Achore Hamita Vezorkan. So Rabbi Zechariah used to turn his face behind him and used to throw the date pits behind behind the chair on which he was sitting. Okay, Hajjun Alach Notol Adam Espino.
Yeah.
What was that?
You have to do it b'shinui.
Well, yeah, I'm saying using a shinui is the way to circumvent the problem of graf shorei. Okay. Yeah. I still hear a lot of background noise, so if everyone could just mute themselves, it's like a little bit distracting. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think okay. It's Mitch.
I don't know. No. Mitch is muted. Okay. Fine. So let's start the next paragraph. So the Mishnah says, Chavis shenishpira matzilin himena mizon shalosh sudos. The Mishnah says, let's say I have a barrel that broke on Shabbos, so one is permitted to save the enough food to eat three meals. Again, this is very reminiscent of what we saw, in the 16th perek when it comes to, if a fire, breaks out on Shabbos, right? How do you salvage the food, right? You have to save enough food for three meals. And not only that, the Mishnah says you can tell other people to come and help you save the food from the barrel. The only thing is that you're not allowed to ask them or you yourself are not allowed to start, mopping up and squeezing and using a sponge to gather all the liquids, again, as we'll see in a second, because that is going to pose a problem of schita. Okay. Then the Mishnah says, "In sochten es apiros lahotzi mehen mashkin v'im yatzu me'atzman asurin." Rabbi Yehuda omer, "Im laochlin hayotze mehen mutter v'im lemashkin hayotze mehen asur." So the Mishnah now presents the following machlokas. According to the Chachamim, a person is never allowed to squeeze fruit on Shabbos. So that's true according to everyone, as we'll see. Right? So you can never squeeze fruit on Shabbos to get the liquid. And not only that, says the Chachamim, even if the juices oozed out of the fruit by themselves somehow, you're still not allowed to use those liquids. Why is that? So that's based on the Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Beitza. That's called Mashkin Shezavu. It's also we'll see it's coming up in a few daf. Mashkin Shezavu means that if juices oozed out of the fruit by themselves, so there was a Gzera Dirabanan that you're not allowed to use those liquids because Chazal were afraid that if we let you use these liquids, then next week you're going to come to actually squeeze out the fruit. So that's a Gzera Dirabanan that even if the juices somehow oozed out of the fruit by themselves, you're not allowed to use that. This is all according to the Chachamim. Rabbi Yehuda, however, makes the following distinction. Rabbi Yehuda says it depends. He says, if the fruit was being set aside to use for food, so then any juices that ooze out of the fruit are permissible. But if the fruits are being used for a liquid, then juices that ooze out are a problem. We're going to see this in the Gemara coming up in a second, that if you squeeze a fruit, and this is actually how we pass in the halacha, that a person is allowed to take a fruit, lichadchila, on Shabbos, and squeeze it directly onto food. So if you want to cut a lemon and squeeze a lemon directly onto your salad or your fish or whatever, that's mutter lichadchila to do on Shabbos. What you cannot do, as we'll see in the Gemara, you cannot take a lemon and squeeze it into an empty bowl and then pour it onto your salad. That's a problem. The only thing that's okay is to squeeze directly onto food. The reason for that, as we'll see in the Gemara coming up soon, is because of a principle the Gemara calls Mashkin Habala Ochel Ka Ochel Dami, that whenever you have a liquid that is being poured or squeezed directly onto a solid, it takes on the status of a solid, and we don't consider that to be schita at all. It's completely mutter to do that. Now again, you have to be careful how you do that, because if you pour it into an empty bowl first and then you mix it in, that could be an isser d'oraisa potentially. So you have to be very careful about that. But in theory, if you want to cut a lemon or a lime or whatever and squeeze it onto a salad or a fish or whatever it is, so then that would actually technically be permissible. Okay, then the mission.
Wait, I'm sorry, Rob. Yeah. Can you explain that one more time? What's the reason that that's allowed?
The reason why that's okay, again, we'll see this in the Gemara coming up soon, is based on a principle called Mashkin Habala Ochel Ka Ochel Dame, that whenever you have a liquid that goes into a salad, a fish, or whatever, it takes on the status of the solid, and therefore it's not, in other words, halachically, we don't view it like this is a liquid at all. We just view this as if it's like another piece of lettuce in your salad, essentially. That's basically what the Gemara is going to say, as we'll see in the Gemara coming up soon. Okay, so the fine. So now the Mishnah says Chalos Devash Shariskan Me'erev Shabbos V'yatzu Me'atzman Asurin V'Rabbi Eliezer Matir. Then the Mishnah has a similar machlokas regarding a honeycomb from a beehive. So again, let's say you have a honeycomb from a beehive and you crush it up from before Shabbos and all of the honey is oozing out of the honeycomb. So the Chachamim say, again, it's usher to use that honey for the same reason we gave before. It's a Mashkin Shezavu problem, because if we let you use the honey that's oozing out by itself now, you may come to squeeze it next Shabbos. Whereas Rebbe Eliezer says, no, it's mutter. Any honey that oozes out of the honeycomb by itself, Rebbe Eliezer holds it's permissible to use on Shabbos. Okay, so the Gemara says, Tana, lo yispog b'yayin v'lo yitapeach b'shemen shelo yaseh kederech shehu oseh b'chol. Comes the Gemara and points out almost like a technical problem midrabanan here. This is not like a malachat related issue. The Gemara says that a person is not allowed to mop up the wine or the oil, because if they do, if they start to mop it up with a sponge or with a rag, that is going to be basically uvda d'chol. It's like a weekday activity. Because, in other words, the way that you would usually clean up a spill of wine or oil during the week, you would take a rag, you would take a sponge, something like that. So the Gemara is really not so concerned here about the schita component. They're more concerned about not doing something in a weekday-like manner. Then the Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, Nispazru lo peros pachatzer melaked al yad v'ochel avalola socha sal velola socha kupa shelo yaseh kederach shu osa v'chol. A similar idea. The Gemara says, let's say you had a whole bunch of fruit that got scattered around your backyard, your courtyard. So the Gemara says that if you want to pick them up on Shabbos, you have to do them, you know, a few at a time and eat them. You can't take a whole bunch of fruit and put it into your basket, again, because it's a weekday activity. It's uvda d'chol. This is not a malacha problem. This is, you know, it looks too much like a weekday activity. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, in sochten es apiros, that we said in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to squeeze fruit on Shabbos. Malacha of schita, and the pashtus says that schita is only a tolda. It's probably a tolda of dush, of threshing, of, you know, you're basically separating the liquid from the fruit. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Mo dehaya Rabbi Yehuda lachachamim bezesim ba'anavim. Comes the Gemara and tells us that again, remember, Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah told us that if the fruit is being used to go onto a food, if the juices are oozing out, but you're going to use it to put onto your salad, then it's okay. So even Reb Yehuda agrees to the Chachamim. In other words, he's machmir also in the case of olives and grapes. In other words, Reb Yehuda will agree that if olives or grapes are oozing out liquid, you would not be permitted to use those liquids on Shabbos, even if you were planning on squeezing them onto a salad. Let's say, why not? My time, huh? Kevan de l'schita ninhu yahiv daite, comes the Gemara and explains that olives and grapes are considered to be something which were specifically designated for the purpose of squeezing. As we'll see in this Gemara in the next couple of daf, so there are going to be different categories of fruit when it comes to the malacha of schita. Many of these halachas are really not so relevant today for the simple reason that most people today, most companies today, make juices out of almost any fruit that exists in the world. Back then, the only liquids that people really made into juices was olive oil and wine. That was really it. No one made pomegranate juice and whatever and smoothies, all this other stuff. So it wasn't considered normal to do that. So olives and grapes, the Gemara says, everyone knows that those things you make into olive oil and wine. So if a guy sees his olives or grapes oozing liquid on Shabbos, he knows going in that he was planning to use that to make olive oil or wine. So the Gemara says that even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that it's going to be problematic to use that. That's according to Rabbi Yehuda's understanding of Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. However, v'ula amarav no chalakaya Rabbi Yehuda af b'zeisim ba'anavim, comes Ula and disagrees. Ula says no, even by olives and grapes, Rabbi Yehuda will disagree with the Chachamim, and Rabbi Yehuda will still say that it is permissible to use the liquid that's oozing out of the olives and the grapes. For Rabbi Yochanan amar halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda b'sharpeiros, the ain halacha k'Rabbi Yehuda b'zeisim ba'anav. So how do we paskin? So comes Rabbi Yochanan and says he basically splits the psak. So when it comes to olives and grapes, we have to be machmir because there are those who claim that Rabbi Yehuda himself is machmir by olives and grapes, at least according to Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So we're going to be machmir when it comes to olives and grapes to not allow you to use liquid that oozes out of the olives and grapes by themselves. Whereas when it comes to any other fruit, we're going to be makil to rely on what we think is the standard opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So if I have other fruits that are oozing liquid on Shabbos, we can rely on the regular opinion of Rabbi Yehuda and allow you to use those liquids. So Amar Rabba, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. So it's basically a two-way street. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Chachamim that olives and grapes are problematic to use liquids that ooze out of them on Shabbos. And conversely, the Chachamim agree with Rabbi Yehuda that other fruits are going to be okay to use the liquids that ooze out. So the obvious problem is, the Gemara says, Amar li Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabbi Abba, ela b'mai plige. So if everyone's agreeing about everything, then what's this machlokas, right? The Gemara formulated what seems to be a machlokas, and now we're saying, no, everyone agrees to everything. In other words, everyone agrees that olives and grapes are a problem, and everyone agrees that other fruits are permissible. So then what are they arguing about? So the Gemara says, Amar leh, lechi tishkach. So Rabbi Abba says to Rabbi Yirmiyahu, go and figure it out. Go out and learn a little bit, and you'll figure out what the machlokas is. So Amar Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak, mistabra betusim berimonim plige. Comes Rav Nachman and says, you know what the machlokas is? The machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is about this middle category of tusim berimonim, of strawberries and pomegranates, or fruits of that nature. Desanya, zesim shemashach mehen shemen va'anovim shemashach mehen yayin v'hechnisan bein la'ochel bein la'mashkin hayotze mehen aser. When it comes to olives and grapes that are oozing out the juices, right? So then we assume that you know, whether those liquids are meant to be used in a food like a salad or a fish, or whether those liquids are meant to be used as an actual drink like olive oil or wine, you are never allowed to use those juices that ooze out of the fruit by themselves on Shabbos under any circumstance. However, tusim shemashach mehen mayim v'rimonim shemashach mehen yayin v'hechnisan l'ochlein hayotze mehen mutter l'mashkin v'lestam hayotze mehen aser divir Rabbi Yehuda v'chachamim omrim bein l'ochlein bein l'mashkin hayotze mehen aser. Whereas when it comes to the juices that ooze out of the things like strawberries and pomegranates, so then we can make the following split within Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda will tell you that if you're planning to use the strawberry juice or the pomegranate juice as in other words to add to your food, that would be permissible. But if you're planning to use it as a straight-up liquid, or stam, meaning to say you don't have any specific intention of using it for one purpose or another, then Rabbi Yehuda says that it's aser. Whereas the Chachamim say that it's usher across the board. It's usher even if you're planning to use it to put onto your food. The Chachamim will say that using the juices of the pomegranate or the strawberries are going to be a problem. So the Gemara wants to know, v'savar Rabbi Yehuda stam usher? Does Rabbi Yehuda really hold that if I have juices oozing out of a pomegranate or oozing out of a strawberry, and there was no specification, I never said what I'm planning to use this for. So it sounded like from the Gemara that Rabbi Yehuda thinks that's a problem. In other words, the only time Rabbi Yehuda allows you to use the juices that ooze out of a pomegranate pomegranate or a strawberry on Shabbos is if you specifically designated them to be used on a food. But it sounds like if you didn't have a designation one way or the other, it sounds like Rabbi Yehuda would hold that that's problematic. So the Gemara says, is that really true? For Hasnan, we have a Mishnah, Meseches Machshirin. The Mishnah says, Chalev ha'isha mitami l'ratzon v'shalo l'ratzon. Chalev behema ina mitami el l'ratzon. Comes the Mishnah, Meseches Machshirin, and makes the following distinction. When it comes to woman's milk, when it comes to breast milk, so the Mishnah Machshirin says that breast milk is mitame l'ratzon v'shalo l'ratzon, which for right now will translate as whether you want the milk there or whether you don't want the milk. We'll see the Gemara is going to have a slightly different definition of this in a second. Whereas when it comes to animal milk, so the Mishnah says that animal milk is only mitame l'ratzon, which again, on the simple, in other words, the simple pshat seems to mean that animal milk is only mitame, can only make things machshir l'kabel tuma, can only make things susceptible to becoming tame if you actually wanted the milk there. So the Gemara is going to now have to explain this question. Amar Rabbi Akiva kal v'chomer hu uma chalev ha'isha she'enu miyuchad elo l'ktanim mitame l'ratzon v'shalo l'ratzon chalev ha'behima she'miyuchad bein l'ktanim bein l'gdolim eno din she'yitame bein l'ratzon uvein shalo l'ratzon. Comes Rabbi Akiva with the following kal v'chomer. Rabbi Akiva says, well, he says when it comes to breast milk, right, so breast milk is only edible for babies, not for older people. So therefore he says that since breast milk is only edible for babies, and yet the Mishnah tells us that it can make something tame l'ratzon and shalo l'ratzon, whether you want the breast milk there or not, it can still make something susceptible to becoming tame. So then when it comes to animal milk, which everybody drinks, with both babies and adults drink, I would say kal v'chomer that animal milk should make something susceptible to becoming tame, regardless of whether you want it there. In other words, so Rabbi Akiva is now questioning the premise of this Mishnah in Machshirin. So the Gemara pushes back. Amrulos, they said to Rabbi Akiva, it's not true. Im tamei chalev ha'isha shelo l'ratzon, shedama gefasa tamei, yitma chalev ha'behema shelo l'ratzon, shedama gefasa tahor. The Gemara says there's a big distinction between the breast milk and the animal milk, namely that when it comes to a human being, when it comes to the woman, so dama gefasa tame, we know that the blood that emanates from a human being is also machshir l'kabel tuma, because we know that there are seven liquids that make something able to become tame, right? And two of them are milk and blood. Now, the notion that blood is something which can, so for example, let's say an apple comes into contact with blood, that apple is now machshir l'kabel tuma. If a sheretz falls on the apple will now become tame. But that notion that blood will make the apple able to become tameh is only true when it comes to human blood, not when it comes to animal blood. So now it turns out, so this is the Chachamim's response to Rabbi Akiva. In other words, Rabbi Akiva thought that that animal milk was so much more machmir than human milk, because human milk is only edible for babies, animal milk is edible for everybody. But now the Chachamim say that that's not true. In other words, that chumrah that you're formulating is not a valid chumrah, because on the other hand, you could argue that you that blood, that only blood from a person can effectuate the status of tuma, whereas blood from an animal cannot. So that's reason to suggest that maybe human milk should actually be more machmir in the realm of making things tame. So the Gemara says, Amar lahen machmir ani b'cholav mi bedam shehacholev l'refuah tame v'hamakas l'refuah tor. So now Rabbi Akiva responds to the Chachamim. He says to them, he says, hang on one second. He says, I can suggest that actually milk is more machmir than when it comes to blood. Why is that? Because if a person, for example, let's say a person is milking a cow because they need the milk for some medicinal purpose, so the Gemara says it doesn't matter that you need that milk for medicinal purpose, it will still effectuate tuma. So in other words, at the end of the day, milk is considered a liquid that will cause something to become tame, regardless of why it is that you're drawing the milk out. So even if the milk is being, in other words, even if you're milking the cow for medicinal reasons, it's still gonna create a status of tuma. Whereas if a person, let's say, does bloodletting on a human being for medicinal reasons, which is usually why bloodletting was done, so then actually that blood is not going to create a status of tuma. So Rabbi Akiva says, I've just proven to you now that in reality, milk is actually more machmir than blood. In other words, the Chachamim were trying to prove from the case of blood that really human milk should be more of a problem than animal milk, because only blood from a human creates a situation of tuma, not blood from an animal, to which Rabbi Akiva responds, that's true, but it's totally irrelevant because we've just proven to you that milk is actually more machmir than blood, because milk can create the status of tuma regardless of whether you want it or not, whereas blood cannot create that status. If you're just drawing out blood for the purpose of bloodletting, for for medicinal reasons, that blood will not create the status of tuma. So how do the Chachamim respond to Rabbi Akiva? Amru lo, sali zesim va'anovim yochichu, shahamashkin hayotzin mehen l'ratzon temeyen, shelo l'ratzon tahorim. So now come the Chachamim and respond and say, I'm going to disprove your theory, Rabbi Akiva, by pointing to the case of a basket full of olives and grapes. How do we see anything from a basket full of olives and grapes? Because what's the halacha? Because liquid that oozes out of olives and grapes, this is coming full circle back to our Gemara. Liquids that ooze out of olives and grapes, regardless of whether you want them there, right? So the Gemara assumes, the Gemara assumes that liquids that ooze out of olives and grapes are only going to pose a problem of creating tumah if you actually want the liquids there. But if you don't want the liquids there, then it's going to remain tahor. So again, the Chachamim's response now to Rabbi Akiva is, I'm going to prove to you from the case of olives and grapes. Again, when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, everyone agrees that olives and grapes are very, very machbir, right? That's like the worst type of fruit we could be talking about in the realm of Hilchos Shechita. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that squeezing olives and grapes is problematic, according to the way that we paskin, and yet we still find room to distinguish when it comes to the realm of Hilchos Tumah V'Tahara, right? We still find a basis to say that there should be a distinction. Now, ironically, the Gemara has still not finished the question yet. This was all a backdrop to asking the Gemara's initial question that started on the bottom of Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Beis. So now the Gemara finally gets to the punchline of the question. The Gemara says, "My lav l'ratzon d'nechalei shelo l'ratzon b'stama u'mazesim ba'anavim divnei schita ninu shelo l'ratzon v'lo klum tusim v'rimonim d'labnei schita ninu lo kol shekein." This was the bottom line. The initial question the Gemara started with on the bottom of the previous Amud was, how can anyone suggest that Rabbi Yehuda holds that if I have juices, liquids oozing out of pomegranates and strawberries, that if I don't specify why I want them, that Rabbi Yehuda will tell me that it's a problem, that it's going to make something tummy. How is that possible? And this is the punchline. How is this the punchline? Because the Gemara just says, if you're going to tell me that we find room to distinguish between, in other words, even in the realm of olives and grapes, right? Olives and grapes, as we've already proven, you know, a few times, is the most machmir fruit when it comes to Shechita. And the Mishnah still tells us that olives and grapes will only affect the status of Tumah if you actually want the liquids there, then I would say Kal v'chomer when it comes to pomegranates and strawberries, which are much less severe than olives and grapes in terms of Shechita, then it's not enough to say, oh, I don't have a specific Kavana. You need to know exactly what you're doing with those liquids in order for it to create Tumah. So that's the Gemara's question. How can anyone suggest that Rabbi Yehuda holds that when there's no specific Kavana involved, that the juices that ooze out of the pomegranates and the strawberries are going to pose a problem, are going to create the status of Tumah? That doesn't make any sense, because by olives and grapes, which are more machmir than strawberries and pomegranates, the status of Tumah is only effectuated if you actively want the liquid there. But if you don't want the liquid there, then it's not. So it sounds like, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you should need to actively want the liquid there in order to create the status of Tumah. So how does the Gemara answer this question? So the Gemara says, lo, it's not true. The Gemara says, we misunderstood the terms l'ratzon and shelo l'ratzon. L'ratzon b'stama, shelo l'ratzon, de galei adaite, de amar lo nechali. Comes the Gemara and says that there's a big difference. L'ratzon means b'stama. L'ratzon means that I didn't have any specific kavana one way or another. Shelo l'ratzon means that I specifically had kavana that I didn't want these liquids to be used for the purposes of creating Tumah V'Tahara. So now what the Gemara is basically saying is that the way to resolve Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, and this is the first answer in the Gemara, to resolve Rabbi Yehuda's opinion is to say that yes, it's true, if I don't have specific kavana, it's going to be metame. The only way that liquids will not affect Tumah, according to the first answer in the Gemara, is if I actively have in mind that they should not create the status of Tumah. You have to have like a negative kavana in order for the liquids to not affect Tumah. That's the first answer. Then the Gemara says, v'iba yisema, second answer, shiny sali zesim va'anovim, kevan dila ibud kaime, me'ikara afkure mafkare luhu. The Gemara says that maybe one can argue that a basket full of olives and grapes should be different. Why? Because since those things are li'ibud kaime, those things are ultimately going to be destroyed. In other words, any juices that ooze out of a grape or an olive are just going to fall on the ground. You're not really going to salvage them. So one can argue that a person essentially declares those things to be hefker. If you declare those things to be hefker, so then if you don't want them, then we know that when it comes to the realm of make of things becoming tame, you need to actively want the liquid there. For example, let's say I lay a bunch of apples on the roof and I think it's going to be a sunny day, and then it starts to pour. So even though the apples are soaking wet, if I wasn't expecting the liquids and I don't want them there, those apples are actually not mekabel tumah, because you need to actively want the liquids to be there. So again, these two answers are essentially reflecting a similar idea that at the end of the day, you need to actively either want or you have to not want the liquids to be there. Again, the first answer, Rabbi Yehuda said the only way that the liquids are not going to make something tame is if you don't want the liquids to be there. The second answer, he was more focusing on the positive aspect, which is that you need to want the liquids to be there as well. Dan, you have a question?
That applies to Anuvim and Zaysim?
Yeah. That was the basis for the whole question on Rabbi Yehuda, because if Anuvim and Zaysim are so machmir, right, are so machmir, and we're still making a distinction between whether you want them or not, right, and we're still saying that if I don't want the liquids, then it's not metame, then kal v'chomer when it comes to strawberries and pomegranates, which are less chomer, for sure we should make this distinction, right? For sure we should say, so that's what prompted this question of the Gemara. Okay, so let's just try to go to the next time in a little bit. So the Gemara says, Ashkechan Rabbi Yehuda demode le Rabbanan b'Zaysim uva Anuvim, Rabbanan. So we've just proven that Rabbi Yehuda subscribes to the Shita of the Rabbanan when it comes to olives and grapes. How do we know that the opposite is true? How do we also know that the Rabbanan agree to Rabbi Yehuda when it comes to other fruits, namely that juices that ooze out of other fruits are permissible? So the Gemara says, Desanya, Sochtin b'figayin uveprishin uveuzredin avalo berimonim, v'shalbeis menashe bar menachim ha'yu sochtin berimonim. Comes the Gemara and says that a person lichachila on Shabbos is allowed to squeeze things like crab apples and quinces and plums and you know, prunes, these kinds of things that are not, again, this is in Bizman HaGemara, were not typically made into liquids, so that would be mutter lechadchila, but you're not allowed to squeeze pomegranates. However, the family of Menashe Bar Menachem, they used to squeeze pomegranates on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, Umimai de Rabbanani, how do we know that this shita that's allowing you to squeeze pomegranates is really the opinion of the Rabbanan? Dilma Rabbi Yehuda, maybe this is just Rabbi Yehuda talking. How do we know that the Rabbanan also concur with Rabbi Yehuda that you're allowed to squeeze the pomegranates lechachila? So the Gemara says, "V'sehevi nami Rabbi Yehuda, emer deshamas leil Rabbi Yehuda yatsu me'atzman, sochtin lechachila mishamas leil." Maybe Rabbi Yehuda only says that you're allowed to use the juices of the pomegranate or the strawberry if they came out on their own. But who's to say that I'm allowed to lechachila squeeze a pomegranate on Shabbos? So the Gemara says, "Ela mayis lechole meimar kevon delab bnei schita ninu afilu lechachila." So the fact that pomegranates, again, back then were not normally squeezed into a juice, that must mean that it's mutter even lechachila for me to squeeze it. So the Gemara says, "No, it's not true. Afilu tema rabbanan kevon delab bnei schita ninu afilu lechachila shmamina rabbanan hishmamina." The fact that the Gemara is allowing you to squeeze these fruits even lechadchila, that would seem to conform with the opinion of the Rabbanan. In other words, since these fruits are not normally squeezed into a liquid in the first place, the Chachamim are going to allow you to squeeze it even lechadchila, make it into a juice.